This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. On today's Bloggers Roundtable, a two-year-long corruption probe in Baltimore escalates with a raid on the home of the city's African-American mayor, Sheila Dixon. And New York Mayor Mike Bloomberg tells a Jewish group to ignore Muslim-baiting emails about Barack Obama. What's really going on? To talk about this, we have Robert Redding, publisher of the Redding News Review, Eric Brown of DetroitNews.com, and Chris Rabb, founder of AfroNetizen.com. He's also a Netroots activist. Hey, folks.
Hello.
Hey, how are you?
So let's start with Baltimore, my hometown. It's one of a handful of major cities with a black female mayor, but now Sheila Dixon is under investigation for corruption. Last Tuesday, police officers and state prosecutor workers raided her home. They came out with boxes, folders, and a blue cooler, and they also talked to a shopkeeper who used to store her collection of fur coats. Now, the probe began in March of 2006 at the center was a question of sweetheart deals for former supporters or campaign supporters. Chris, we have been dealing, it's going on forever, but recently with a lot of questions about black leadership. And Sheila Dixon was actually, is actually widely considered to be a good mayor. What do you think this is going to do to her and to the whole questions about black leadership?
Well, it kind of validates this mainstream narrative that we are less trustworthy than our white counterparts in positions of, public service. So it's very damaging in that regard. Obviously, there's a gender issue as well. And when conflated, it makes it even more challenging for black women to rise among the ranks. I'm sure that there is not a proportionate number of black women who are mayors across the country. And so it's a challenge. But, you know, it's interesting. Whenever there appears to be the most opportunity for a black person to ascend in a public space, it's when that entity, whether it's a city, county, state, and country in this particular instance, in this election year, is when that jurisdiction is at its very worst. And I think that's a very interesting correlation between black political ascent and the electorate. I mean, what that means is essentially that, well, we may let someone be more viable than they would otherwise because things are so bad off, how much worse could they make it? It's a very cynical view, but right. A lot of people have mentioned that, particularly with regard to the Obama candidacy.
Well, you know, Eric, you know, speaking of what's the bottom, I mean, what's going on now in Detroit, which is another city where you got issues, your city?
Right, and this is another shake your head type of moment for blacks because it's, you know, obviously where there's smoke, there's fire, looking at the information as it relates to even 2 years ago, where they started the probe 2 years ago, and there are so many hints of impropriety when you read over the information about her sister working for her, her former campaign chairman getting this $500,000 over 5 years. I mean, it's sad because you want to be very proud of people that look like you getting in positions to make a difference. But unfortunately, far too often, and we do not own the patent on corruption, but far too often we have too many African-American men and women getting into these political positions and making an embarrassment out of themselves.
Robert, there has been yet another issue, which is that William Jefferson, a congressman from Louisiana, a whole bunch of his relatives were just indicted. $90,000 was found a while ago in his freezer, and now there's a question of whether or not his family members were involved in siphoning off federal money for private gain. And some of the charges were up to 250 or even more years per person. That's how serious these charges were. So it's a time of a lot of consideration. Who do you think should be kind of riding sheriff on this? And I'm not talking about the individual cases, but I'm talking about the overall questions about leadership.
Well, I think that the people should definitely be responsive to what's going on. The fact that these people are elected representatives, they need to be held accountable. People need to know what they're doing and what they're not doing clearly. So that is the issue right there. I think that the constituency is responsible. In addition to that, I think what's also important to remember is that with Sheila Dixon, we had a situation where she did these things as council chair. She also inherited a city, as you know, that is in a dilapidated state. There's a lot of work and improvement that still needs to be done. A lot of times when these mayors get into these cities, they have a lot of, and I don't want to make excuses for Kwame Kilpatrick or William Jefferson or anyone else, but let's put this in perspective and say that a lot of these urban settings that these people are in charge of need a lot of help, a lot of assistance, and the tax base is not there to support the type of efforts that they're trying to use to overhaul the city.
And Robert,
go ahead.
Robert brings up a good point, because I think part of what goes on in these urban areas is that the electorate want to always turn the other cheek, because they look upon these leaders or so-called leaders, and I use that word loosely because being elected to a political position does not make you a leader, but we always tend to turn the other cheek because we look at the elected officials as being victimized by the white establishment, but these problems that they bring on themselves are brought on by themselves. That's what's so unfortunate.
Well, I have to disagree a little bit with that, because I think it's a combination. I think we have to hold everyone to task, regardless of race. However,
right.
We have to understand that there is a system at play by which the most viable candidates must understand and must be a part of. And so that also lets you know what type of folks you're going to inherit as incumbents, because if you know how the game is played and you know the game is fixed, if you actually win, quote-unquote, win that game, you really can't do that with and be pristine at the end of the process. And so what we have to look at beyond the specific allegations of specific candidates and incumbents, we also have to look at the system itself, and that is not a particularly sexy thing. But if you watch the show like The Wire, which is, you know, about Baltimore politics and culture and such, it's an indictment of systems that are broken, institutions that are inherently corrupt or corrupted. And I think once you look at those issues, it provides a better context for how and why these people fall from grace, or perhaps were never at that point to begin with.
Well, I want to go ahead, just for anybody who's just tuning in, we're talking about politics on today's Bloggers Roundtable, and with us we've got Robert Redding, publisher of the Redding News Review, Eric Brown of DetroitNews.com, and Chris Rabb, founder of AfroNetizen.com. So guys, I want to move on to another political topic. New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg is defending Barack Obama from a whisper campaign that says that Barack Obama is a Muslim. Now, Bloomberg told a Jewish group last Friday in Boca Raton, Florida, to ignore emails that try to portray Obama as Muslim. Bloomberg is a Democrat turned Republican, and about a year ago then he became an independent. Now, the Obama campaign had an incident recently where two Muslim women wearing the hijab or headscarf were asked to move so they wouldn't be in sight of most people, and the Obama campaign and Obama himself apologized. So do you think in a way that the campaign and even Bloomberg are doing harm by raising the issue again and again, or is it good protection, Robert?
Oh, I don't think that they are doing him any favors by raising the issue again and again. I talked a little bit about the headscarf issue over the weekend on the radio show. I think what's interesting about this particular incident is that I think that his handlers did know that this would be an issue with these women later on, and they said it's easier to beg for forgiveness. I don't have any proof of that, but I just suspect that. Now, Barack did call these women and did say to them, "I'm so sorry for what happened," but they didn't want that picture taken. It's clear. In addition to that, why is it such a big deal? And I think I'm the only person asking this. Why is it such a big deal that Jewish voters believe that he might secretly be a Muslim, even if he is one? My point is that are we in such a polarized state in this world and in America where that type of thing even matters, even if he were secretly a Muslim or were overtly a Muslim?
Yeah, he is not a Muslim, first of all.
And he's not.
But you know, of course, the part of the issue here is that there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. Being a Muslim
right.
is a perfectly, you know, valid religion like all the other ones we have in this pluralistic society.
Right,
so,
but polling has suggested that there are few things worse than being a Muslim in terms of endearing the electorate to you. I think atheism and Mormonism are like just above it or just below it. I mean, it's that bad. There's a level of bigotry and ignorance that exists. And if you were born with a middle name, a Muslim middle name like his, it doesn't help when you have people who are doing these whisper campaigns, particularly online, and you have folks who really are already uninformed because corporate media does not give them the substance perhaps they desire or should have, then that's what happens. All of these things matter. It may not be the one thing, but in totality, it may actually have a negative impact.
But Eric, do you think that part of the issue here is the whole question of the vice presidency as well? I mean, Bloomberg is someone who has had a very interesting career. Obviously, Bloomberg Media is his company. He's a billionaire. He self-financed his campaign for New York mayor. He was always a moderate Republican when he was elected and then became an independent. Do you think the real thing that's going on here with his work is actually angling for a VP spot?
I would not be surprised if he's jockeying for that position, but just to take a step back, I was at the rally last week in Detroit, and I wholeheartedly believe that the handlers of the Senator Obama's campaign had nothing to do with the decision made by some volunteers to not have those two women sit behind the stage. You even walk into the arena, once you get into Jolo's arena, the volunteers that were there at the site, a lot of them probably were there just that day or just got hired that day. And you have people with these ignorant views, and they arbitrarily, in my opinion, thought that it would not be in the best interest for these women to be sitting right behind the camera in sight of camera view, considering that would be the main shot from all the news media that was there. But as far as Bloomberg goes, I mean, I like Bloomberg. I think he has done a decent job in New York. To come to the defense of Barack Obama, one can say is admirable, but at the same time, he does seem to be rather sincere in his message with regard to the whisper campaign and all that, because, you know, you just said it, just because someone has a Muslim name, middle name, or first name does not make them a Muslim. And there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim. I mean, come on.
Well, Chris, what do you think about the Veep stakes question?
Well, it wouldn't surprise me if he would consider that. I kind of wonder why a billionaire would want to be second fiddle to anyone.
Why would he even want to be mayor, though? I mean, he don't need to work.
Being the mayor of, you know, arguably one of the most important cities of all time is, I think, a little different. It's kind of like I'm from Chicago. The most important position you could ever hold being from Chicago is mayor of Chicago. It's bigger than a senator, bigger than a governor. But with regard to his, I guess, tacit support of Obama, at least with regard to the rumor mill, it's a pretty low-hanging fruit. You know, I mean, he's not a McCain fan, and it's the right thing to do. And if you have influence in the Jewish community, which seems to have a very, very high bar for accepting Barack Obama's candidacy, at least until recently, then, you know, it doesn't hurt. He could do it just because it's the right thing to do. I don't know if I'm that naive, but it's certainly possible.
Eric, I want to turn us to one last topic. Detroit schools facing an estimated $408 million shortfall next year. There's a plan to cut 9% of staff, and teachers are asking for, you know, folks to hold off. 300 people already got layoff notices. Part of it is a question of whether or not the staff should have been scaled down over time as the number of students got smaller. But from your knowledge, did the number of students get smaller because of demographics in terms of, you know, how many people are in Detroit, or was it that people just are leaving the public schools, or both?
It's twofold, Farai. It's a matter of demographics. A lot of people are leaving the city of Detroit for various reasons, and at the same time, you have, I mean, it's just so many charter schools in the area, and parents want what's best for their kids. If you're going to bring a charter school into the area, and that charter school is promising you a better education, and you don't see a good education out of the Detroit public school system, you're going to give the charter schools a try. And it didn't help that when they hired a new superintendent not too long ago, that person came with a lot of baggage, and they hired her, paying her more than any superintendent has ever made in the public school system in Detroit. And the writing was on the wall even before she got here not to hire her, and they went ahead and hired her anyway. And now a lot of people are looking at the school board as a failure in addition to this new superintendent. So it's a combination of a lot of things, most of which the school system is in so much decline, people are finding alternatives for a way to get their kids educated.
Robert, you know, what does this say about the public school issues across America? Because Detroit is not the only place. What do you think might be a good solution to some of the questions of how to keep parents invested in public schools?
These schools need some sugar. You cannot make lemonade without sugar. And sugar is the money. We're talking about these inner city schools. A lot of them are these schools that we're referring to, like Detroit, like Washington, D.C. My mother was an Atlanta public school teacher for 30 years in the Atlanta public school system. Bless her soul, rest her soul. Let me just say this. I think that people, the thing that I threw out there earlier, what's important to remember is at the end of the day, when you have these big city mayors and these school systems, these inner city school systems, they're dealing with these unique issues that they're dealing with in the inner city, crime, drugs, all of that stuff, sex, etc., and they don't have the tax base to support the initiatives that they need, you run into these types of situations. And back on Barack Obama for a second, in Detroit, if those are volunteers, then they are working for Barack Obama, which means they make the decision. So someone with the Barack Obama camp is responsible in that regard. So we have to look at these things in their totality when we look at what are the motivating factors, whether it be the school system, whether it be, you know, Barack Obama and his staff. What are the motivating factors of what make people do what they do? A lot of times when you see people move out of the inner city, they do that because they don't want to be around black people. They feel like they are going to get a better education outside the city. Even some black people feel like they don't want to be around black people, and they feel like they're going to get a better education outside the city. Barack Obama's workers, some of them biased, so they didn't want him to have to take a picture with folks in headscarves because of all of that. And what's interesting about Detroit, last thing here, what's interesting about Detroit is everybody was watching that whole Kwame Kilpatrick and would he show up to that rally, and the whole thing is, that's not the thing that got Barack Obama in trouble. It was some supporters that moved those people out of the head with the headscarves out of the way.
All right. Well, that is it for today. Gentlemen, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Robert Redding is publisher of the Redding News Review. Eric Brown blogs for DetroitNews.com. And Chris Rabb is the founder of AfroNetizen.com. You can find links to their blogs on our blog, NPRNewsAndViews.org.